Welcome to the official podcast of No Poor Among Them, a project devoted to education and inspiration in the art of service and the passion to end poverty. We're very excited to have with us today Stacy Garrett and Brianna Hardesty. Stacy is 24 years old from Cache Valley, Utah, and has 1 year left of her degree in nutrition and dietetics at Utah State University. She's been married for 2 years and is working as a medical assistant at a pediatrics clinic. Brianna is 26 years old from Santa Rosa, California. She has 1 year left of her degree in nutrition and dietetics at Utah State. She served an LDS mission in London, England, and does menu planning for a residential center. So, Stacy and Brianna, welcome to No Poor Among Them.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, you guys had this great experience of going down to Guatemala for the Liahona Children's Foundation for, was it 3 weeks?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about how you came to learn about the internship program for the Liahona Children's Foundation.
This is Brianna. I'm in the dietetics, the didactic program at Utah State, which means that I'll do an internship after school, but I have to have about 1,000 hours of dietetic-related experience in order to apply, and that internship dictates whether I can take my RD exam or not, so it's really important. And I have been wanting to find some kind of experience this summer that would give me a lot of hours and give me experience with research and but also applying my education that I've been working hard to obtain. And it was also just a matter of prayer. A lot of my friends have been picking up jobs that were going to help them to have a lot of hours, and I wanted an experience that I could apply my education, but would also help other people. And so I was actually, March and April. So I'm right at the end of when I needed to find something, and I was in the institute, and I went downstairs, and there was just a flyer that, and it was for the NutriTour, and so I was learning about that, and I ended up, but I knew I had skills that I could help with, and I didn't want to just do humanitarian work, which is great, but I wanted to apply my skills. And so I emailed Brad Walker and Polly and asked them if they wanted to send any interns down there. And I just knew a lot of people up at Utah State that might be interested. So that's how I got involved.
Okay, yeah. And we should say Brad Walker and Polly Sheffield are co-founders of the foundation. So. And I should also add that I sent out a lot of information to several institutes, and you guys were the only bites we got. So I feel like that was something of a miracle that happened. So how about you, Stacy? Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved?
Yeah, sure. So I was looking for something spectacular to do this summer, like I do every summer, but I was actually planning on leaving to D.C. for a whole summer, and I just didn't feel right to leave my husband for 3 months, and Brianna told me about this great experience, and then she told me about the internship, and then I just had to bite and just take it, and it was just a whirlwind, and everything just fell into place, and it was just like we were meant to go. So that's just, I learned about it very quick and easy, so it was great.
So are you guys longtime friends, or I guess you're from different places, but in the same program of study?
Yeah, we spent a lot of times over the desk in the library studying biochemistry and organic chemistry over the past 2 years, so we're pretty good friends.
Yeah, you make good friends doing stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have a special bond, yes. So
sure. Okay. And so before we started this podcast, you were both telling me that you're super seniors and that you took a little while before deciding on dietetics. So tell us a little bit more about maybe how you felt drawn to that and how that assisted the Liahona Children's Foundation this summer.
Yeah, so with dietetics, I mean, it's a lot of chemistry, a lot of advanced nutrition courses. I mean, it's a lot of nutrition education and counseling. There's a lot of research there as well. And so I think we just both felt drawn to it just because we love nutrition and we love the human body. And it's also a good way to help people. And we're in this country, just in the United States, there's just so much help that needs with nutrition in our diets. And as far as, you know, the Liahona Foundation goes, you know, we wanted to gain more experience in, you know, research and obtain dietary recalls. We knew the repercussions of malnutrition and just wanted to be a part in fixing that problem, even if it was just a small part.
Yeah, for me, nutrition was kind of one of the things that grabbed my attention because I think for me, I like school, but there wasn't anything that I wanted to study and that really, like, struck my fancy. And I just found that through nutrition was something I could apply into my life every day and that, you know, can make such a big difference in people's lives. You know, according, you know, the Liahona Children Foundation, you know, the children, if they are able, and we talked a lot about this, you know, with Bob Reese, that, you know, if children get adequate nutrition while they're younger, they're much more susceptible to give back to their society. To their society, to their communities, to the church. They can be more active because they have developed properly mentally and physically.
Right, yeah. Okay, so co-founder Brad Walker, I think, has a current estimate, and it is just that, it's an estimate, that there are 80,000 active LDS kids in the world who suffer from some sort of malnutrition. So can you help us break down the different types of malnutrition and the effects that it has on children and how to best ease those ill effects?
Yeah, so there's two types of, it's called protein energy malnutrition. The first type is kwashiorkor. It develops acutely. It's in conjunction usually with infection. And so with these third world countries, you know, they have poor water sources that include parasites and all sorts of bugs. And, you know, they can cause malabsorption by disturbing the intestine, the wall of the intestines. And so if they're not getting, you know, even if they're getting adequate nutrition and, you know, good food intake, they still might not be absorbing it very well, which can cause this malnutrition. And then,
do you want to talk about the symptoms?
Yes. Like, oh, yeah. Like, so the symptoms, kwashiorkor. So they tend to be more, they have edema in their, like, stomach, trunk area, extremities, and on our face. And that can actually mask, you know, the wasted appearance. And so a lot of, you know, people will say, this child looks healthy, but really they could be malnourished because they just have this edema or swelling fluid in their trunk. And then they can also have, you know, skin problems, which can also lead to infections and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And we did see a few cases.
Yeah,
where,
we did see that.
Mm-hmm. You know, they look like they have these fat bellies, but really, you know, when we touch them, they're
swollen.
Yeah, they're swollen. So, and they have, like, really thin arms. Another
type of malnutrition.
Yeah, type of malnutrition is, it's called marasmus. That's the chronic malnutrition. It's more severe. It's developed over weeks and months of not getting enough protein and calories. It's characterized by a wasted appearance due to diminished fat stores. I think a lot of us have seen pictures of this where the children are, you know, you have protruding rib cages and you can see their hip bones. So that is, that's a more severe type of marasmus. There's also a combination of the two. That's called, I'm going to try and say this right, but marasmic kwashiorkor. And this usually follows from acute stress in the body and is associated with a high mortality rate. So if this develops, the chance of the children dying are much higher.
Then in order to, you know, ease those effects, you know, in chronic cases, you'll see a stunted height. Sometimes their head circumference is also stunted. And they also, you know, research has shown that it can be corrected more easily before the age of 2 years old. And so if you provide proper nutrition, you know, try to before the age of two, you can, you know, help their linear growth. And so that's one good thing about the foundation is they get in there and try to aid the, you know, children and help protect against that stunted growth. And then, yeah, provide proper growth. And then there's also, with children, there's a period of catch-up growth. And most children do just fine during this period if they even have any form of malnutrition. But if they don't have the proper nutrition, they will not get that catch-up growth and still be stunted final growth. So those are the, you know, types of malnourishment.
Yeah, okay. So you talked about how physically limiting it is. And then you also mentioned smaller heads. Does that does that mean any sort of cognitive impairment?
Yes, especially, yeah.
It does. Okay. So if these young kids are malnourished, it basically means they can't perform as much physical labor or any sort of mental, well, at least not to the degree they otherwise could have.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, so with a stunted head circumference, their brain cannot grow as well, as big as it should be. And so they definitely do get this, you know, cognitive development delay. And, you know, studies here in America have even shown that even in school, they don't learn as well and they cannot perform as well. They actually tend to be more angry, ornery, and
behavioral problems.
Yeah, behavioral problems. And there's, you know, long-term effects with that as well, and not even to include, you know, vitamin and mineral deficiencies.
Yeah. One thing that Stacy and I suggested to the foundation, we went down there and looked at their salt, because they cook with a lot of salt, but it's not iodized.
Oh.
And so part of your why we iodize salt is because when the fetus is developing, if they're not getting enough iodine, their brains don't develop enough. And that's a large problem down in Guatemala, is that an iodine deficiency, you know, while they're really young, causes that cognitive
delay.
Yeah, delay. So we suggested that they supplement with coarse iodized salt.
Okay. And is that as readily available and as cheap as it is here in the U.S.?
Well, not in Guatemala.
Yeah, no. Just here in the United
States. We didn't see any iodized salt while we were down there.
Is that right? Wow. Okay.
So well, I think it would be something that needs to be imported.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. Okay, so Brianna and Stacy, you both traveled to several areas in Guatemala, and you screened kids. So could you tell us a little bit about that process, and how many kids did you actually screen while you were there?
Yeah, so we traveled to actually about seven different areas in Guatemala. We were pretty well toured.
Yeah.
And we screened about, it was estimated 590 children. During the three-week tour, and in some days we would do as many as 175 children in just one day.
Wow.
So, yeah, and then we'd move about every 4 days and travel to another area. Each area we went to a few homes of participants, We observed their living conditions, quality of life. We also did some like service in the areas, and then they conducted the coordinators of each area. They set up a time and day at a church house, and we'd go there with the meeting the children and their moms, and we measured and weighed the children, and then we'd send them over to one of us as the interns.
Yeah, so as interns, what Stacy and I did about a month before we left was we put together a survey that included clean water practices. You know, what did they do? A lot of them boiled their water. Others bought filtered water if they had more money. And some people used chlorine tablets.
Mm-hmm.
We also asked some questions about breastfeeding practices, and we did a dietary recall, which means that we asked them how frequently they ate certain types of food, you know, what they ate for carbohydrates, how many times a week they ate different proteins, frequency of fruits and vegetables. We also ended up asking them questions about how they mix the supplements, if they're following the directions or if they did it just according to how they wanted to. So that would affect how long the supplements did last in their homes. But also we just found that there was a lot of food insecurities. A lot of them would say, you know, when we have money, we buy fruits and vegetables, or when we have money, we eat a lot of eggs. And so we just sense that there was a lot of people that didn't really know when their next meal was, where it was coming from or when.
Okay. So talk about the supplements a little bit. Did you administer them yourselves? Mm-hmm. Like what is it? What does it look like? How do you administer it?
Yeah, so the coordinators, they would just organize all the women in a line, and they had these huge boxes or, you know, bags of, it's the protein drink mix, which is called Incaparina, and so just like a protein drink to us with some vitamins and minerals. And then they also gave out some powdered milk and then what they call mush, which is just oatmeal. And then about every 6 months they give multivitamins and then an anti-parasite medication. And so they would just line up the, you know, families and give each of them their own supplement, which is those that I just said. And then in one area, we actually talked with the coordinator, and she said that the money even given by the foundation, I mean, it's a lot, but it still isn't enough. And we did see that. We saw women that were coming towards the end, and we just didn't have enough to give to them. And so... And then, you know, in some area, and then that same area, she also was able to get the donations of toothbrushes and toothpaste, and the children just went crazy over it, which they really liked. So, yeah.
But the women were really, the coordinators were really organized. They had, you know, print-offs that had the children's names and the mothers, and so they would, and each area, they supplemented a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. I think it's maybe according to what they could get their hands on in the certain area. In Solala, they gave two packages of Incaparina and a bag of mush, and it just varied. And also, I think they do a little bit differently if the mother's breastfeeding. I think they get two packs of dried milk.
All right, so this program in general, we're providing nutritional supplements for these kids. So some might look at that as a handout. And, you know, the church really stresses self-reliance and giving a hand up rather than a handout. So from your viewpoint, is providing a nutritional supplement a handout? And why or why not?
Okay, so, yeah. Some do look at the handout and that it doesn't promote independency among the families. You know, after our experience, I'd have to disagree. Just because you're not completely replacing their diet, you're not giving them everything. You're just supplementing the child that is considered malnourished and helping them grow properly. You can kind of view it as the same as like a bishop's storehouse would work, you know, just kind of supplementing them, helping them. And just from seeing the families, how hard they worked at providing for their families. I mean, they were working their hardest, which still was not enough. The women were just extremely grateful, and they just kept bearing their testimonies to us, how grateful they were. They were just so happy that they just didn't have to, you know, listen to their children cry out because they're so hungry. And so, yeah, just from our experience, I don't see it as the handout. Yeah.
And we talked a lot about this because I think that, you know, there could be some resistance to giving, you know, quote unquote, handouts. But the children down there, you know, they're the ones that suffer. You know, whether or not it's a handout or not, who cares? As long as, you know, the children are getting mm-hmm. what they need, you know, they aren't the ones that can go out and work and, mm-hmm. You know, they're dependent on someone else. So I don't care whether they call it a handout or not, you know, they need it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we went to a place called Chulak, and it's up in the mountains, and it took us forever to get there. And it was hot and humid. It was really hot.
Yeah. it was really hot. I actually got heat stroke.
I got heat stroke on the way over. But a family walked with their little kids, five kids, 2 hours to get screened so they could get the supplements. So, you know, there is a need, and it's important that those that, I think the hymn that always went through my mind was, you know, because I've been given much, mm-hmm. I too must give. And I just thought about everything that I have. You know, I can give up $20 a month, $30. I'm in college. I pay, you know, all of my bills. But there's so much that we don't need
mm-hmm.
that we can give to other people so that they can have, you know, a better life and more security for their children, which is so important.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know I was really shocked to learn about this problem. So were either of you aware of it, and what was your reaction to it? Just learning about it. I will ask you later what your firsthand reaction was. But.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, we're always aware of malnutrition, you know, especially in third world countries. But, you know, when we put it in terms of LDS children, you always assume that the church was able to take it, you know, care of everybody and reach everybody and help everybody. And so when it was just looking at me straight in the face, you know, I saw these members of the church that were just struggling so much and their children were malnourished. I soon realized that the church needs help. You know, that's what's so great about the foundation. They're there to help the church where, you know, maybe they don't have the ability to see what, you know, where the help is needed. You know, I was just so grateful to be part of that. And just also, you know, the stakes, they get their money from fast offerings, and where, you know, the people in their stakes may not make as much money, and therefore the stakes don't get as much money themselves. And so it's, you know, pretty hard to help every single person, you know, every single member. So I was actually really shocked.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, just kind of echo what Stacy said. You know, if someone in my ward needed help,
mm-hmm.
you know, I know that the bishop would take care of, you know, whatever they could. And, you know, members within would be helpful, you mm-hmm. know, would jump on the, you know, and the, I don't know, if they needed help, they would be willing to help. And so I think, you know, when it is a hard time when, you know, 90% of the ward is struggling, who do you call on to help? You know, that hopefully what we did down there will cause, and, you know, in this podcast will cause people to think again, you know, how can I help? How can I help today? What difference can I make?
What about when you experienced it firsthand?
Experienced firsthand. There's nothing quite like it, seeing a child, especially where Brianna and I know what the clinical signs are of malnutrition. And where we saw, you know, children that were in families that were just so you know, poor and living in such terrible conditions. There were a few hard nights after that. It was just very heavy on our hearts. We just saw that there's so much need, and it kind of felt like we were, I felt like I was very selfish, you know, living back home with all my comforts and how much I could give up in order to give to these people. And so I just kept thinking about how spoiled we are and how much need is there is in, you know, Guatemala and other third world countries. And so that was just kind of my reaction. It was really hard.
Yeah. There are a lot of times that, you know, we'd go into a place and we'd start screening the kids, and like, I just had to fight back tears because it was just like, I don't know, it's, and also coming back and doing the data, you know, I started calculating the numbers and, you know, the
percentiles.
Yeah, the percentiles, and, you know, and it, again, it's just, it was a wonderful, wonderful trip, but it was very emotionally heavy because, you know, I knew I could leave in 3 weeks and come back to my nice, you know, my nice clean house and clean sheets, but I knew that was, you know, their reality that they lived with day in and day out, and that was hard to see.
Yeah. So, could you briefly talk about what you learned from the Guatemalan Saints?
Yeah, we learned quite a bit. So the Guatemalan Saints, I would just say they taught, you know, humility, love, selflessness, devotion to the gospel. The members we met were just always so loving and giving. Like, for example, the mothers of the participating children, they would always just give us gifts, and you knew that it just came straight from their house. They just grabbed whatever they could, and, you know, they could not afford to give it, but yet they gave it all. And you can just, the Guatemalan Saints, they were just true converts, and they worked hard for the Lord and their families. They worked hard in missionary work. They were always looking for investigators. And then just they taught me about true happiness. I mean, even when they had nothing, you know, they were just completely happy. Just thought about, like, a lot about my life, and I have so much, and even with a lot of Americans, they have so much, and we still find it hard to be happy.
Right.
So, yeah, I learned a lot.
Yeah, I just, like, one experience came to mind. We were in a place called Totonicapan, and we were helping a lady with with her ceiling, with kind of just patching it up so that we were heading into the rainy season down there. And, you know, while we were helping out, she goes straight into her cupboard and pulls out this skirt and gives it to me. And then she goes back and she goes into her cupboard again and grabs, you know, an apron and, you know, and she gives Stacy and I all of us gifts just right out of her home. You know, I don't know if someone came to help me fix something, if I'd go in and grab, you know, a pair of pants and a shirt and say, hey, take this, you know, it's just, you know, and they're heartfelt and giving, and it just showed me a lot of, you know, Heavenly Father's love and a lot about gratitude.
Okay. So final question here, and I think it probably has a lot to do with the last one. I was hoping that each of you could talk about one unforgettable experience that you had as an intern in Guatemala.
Yeah, so it's hard to pinpoint just one. There are so many, but one that came to my mind was when we first arrived to Guatemala. We were in our first area, Momostenango. Our coordinator, Gloria, she took us up to these rural areas way up in the hills to visit some families' homes. And so one family that we visited, they had three children. Their one son, who's 4 years old, he actually looked like he was 2 years old. And we, you know, definitely picked up on the symptoms of the chronic malnutrition. So we visited their home, which was about a 9 by 6 foot room. There's dirt floors, a tin roof. The walls, you could tell that there's light shining through them, so they weren't, you know, completely warm. They had rags for beds, barely any cooking tools. So when we obtained their dietary recall, we found that they only ate about 3 tablespoons of food per meal, and that's whatever they could find, whether it's beans or rice or corn, and they only ate that about 2 times per day. So we delivered them some supplements, and we showed the mom how to make them, and then we gave it to their children, and then they drank it like it was just going out of style. And they were just so grateful and sweet, and they're actually just so happy. I mean, the mom just couldn't stop smiling. And so it was just my first experience with complete poverty, and it just changed me and my way of thinking just instantly. So that was just one experience that I could really remember.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another experience was when, was that in Wewetenango?
Mm-hmm.
When we were up in Wewetenango, there was a woman there, and she told one of the coordinator, I think, she told the coordinator that she had a really sick baby and she didn't want anyone to see the baby. And so, you know, after we did a lot of them, we went to go measure and weigh the baby and to get a dietary recall. So we just went into one of the rooms in the church so she could have some privacy. And when we saw the baby, we saw that he had a cleft palate. But I don't think that down there they really understood that what that was, and that that's a common thing that happens to a lot of children. And after weighing and measuring the baby, the baby was having a hard time feeding, and was due to have surgery in about a month. But she said that she was running out of formula and didn't have money to pay for the formula. And it was hard, and so we kind of collaborated together, and us as internships and interns and the people that were doing the NutriTour, I think it was about, we paid, I think, like 300 quetzales, which is about, I don't know,
50 maybe?
Yeah, $50. To have them buy specific formula for the baby. And the baby needed to have a concentrated formula so they, to make up for the calorie deficiency. And so they, you know, would go through the formula really fast. But Stacy and I were able to talk to the mom and just explain to her, through a translator, of course, because we don't speak Spanish, but that, you know, that was a normal thing for a normal thing that the baby had a cleft palate, and that once the baby got the surgery that he would be able to, you know, have that catch up time, and could grow and have a happy and healthy life. And she just, her and her husband were just really concerned that, you know, the baby was going to be healthy, and she just wanted reassurance, which we were able to give, and that was really a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. That that same experience is one that Maria Lindsay and Emily Rampton shared. So,
oh really?
So that's great. Okay, well, I just want to thank Stacy Garrett and Brianna Hardesty for talking today about their experience. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you
for having us.